So what'd your wheel look like those days?
Well, it was just a fish wheel. You know,
three-sided ones, and you get.
A lot of guys had a three basket, you know, or two, you know, and we just had two baskets, you know.
How big's your basket?
Well, but that one year we had a 8-foot basket, you know.
8-foot.
A lot of cross, yeah.
How deep?
Well, yeah, it all depends, you know, where you was fishing. Some places deeper, when we built them, you know, where we could raise them and lower them, you know, the stanchions. A lot of guys that make their basket 10, 12 feet, you know, and some guys that only have a 6-foot basket. All depends how hard you wanted to fish. And if you was in a good spot, a lot of places are better than others, you know. Sometimes you'd get in a good spot, all you needed was it seemed like the fish would hit in there. And then some places you'd get the, wasn't no good, you know, wasn't, you'd get fish, but it wasn't very good, you know, and too many hit in there.
You have to put a lead in?
Well, a lot of guys use them, but I never put any in because I always caught all the fish I wanted without them. I never wanted too many, you know. You couldn't sell them, you know. You could sell a few dried fish, you know. There was no places, nobody. There was guys had dogs around town, you know. They'd buy fish, but there was no big market for them, you know.
So how many fish would you catch in a usual summer?
Well, it all depends how the run was, you know. That's it. That one year we had a good run. There was three of us fished together, and me and my brother, we just fished a little while. And we dried 100 bales, and we had, and those guys had that much too. And they kept on fishing. I don't know how much they had a lot of dogs, and we had all we wanted. So we just quit.
What's that, 50 to a bale?
No, 50 pounds, 30 big fish, about 30 fish to a bale. Here's the figure, about 50, 55 pounds to a bale. That was about the average bales around the country.
Hmm. What did you usually figure you needed for to make it through the winter with fish?
Well, that varied. It all depends, on your dogs, how big a team you had. And a lot of guys, when they're around home and that, you know, they'd cook for their dogs, you know, and then they'd put cornmeal and stuff or oatmeal. And that was cheap them days, you know. And then, of course, you fed tallow too, you know. You couldn't feed them straight fish, you know, all the time, yeah. But a dog, you figured at least a pound and a half of fish a day, you know, to a dog, you know, at least that much. A bigger dog, guys would feed them more. They'd give them a fish and a half when they was working them, you know, and give them a chunk of tallow, you know. And of course, when you was cooking for them, you give them a pretty good can full of, took the fish and sliced it up, you know, and put some tallow in it there if you had tallow, or you either cook cornmeal or a lot of times when there was no fish, you just fed them straight cornmeal, you know. There was years there was no fish, you know, around and hard. And then when there was lots of fish, you couldn't even hardly sell them, you know, guys fish, you know. I seen a lot of times you could go right to the store, your NC store, and buy salmon 5 cents a pound, you know, dog salmon. When I didn't fish, we take our fish and our dogs and put them in these fish camps, guys that was fishing, they'd feed them for a couple of dollars a month, one of your dogs, you know. Well, they had their own dogs, and they were trapped, and that was all gravy, you know. They'd make a couple hundred dollars a month a year if you had 6-7 dogs, you know, and that was pretty good at that time. I'd buy them enough grub to live all winter. See, there in the 30s, there was a lot of dogs around here, you know. Everybody had dogs, you know. Just about everybody had a few, you know, that even guys living out that wasn't trapping. They'd have 2-3 dogs that come into town when they wanted to haul their wood or.
Yeah,
and then there was a lot of big teams, you know, guys is freighting with him. You know, when I first come around, you're hauling freight out and mail. The mail was still coming in here with dogs, you know, coming from Nenana to Tanana. Charlie Shade, he had the contract. And
what's that contract worth?
Well, all depends. It come out for bid, what you bid on it. Then they haul the mail from here to Rampart with dogs, and it come up for bid, and whatever you, the lowest bidder got it, you know.
What was the low bid like usually?
Well, I don't know what they're getting so much a trip. Just what? I never paid much attention. It wasn't much, about $150, I think. They were getting something like that from Nenana to Tanana. They had to split that. Then they had a guy, Ambrose Krosnikoff. He was quite a... He carried it for years from Tanana to Manlier. And then Charlie Shade would come from Nenana to here, and then he'd turn around and go back. And then... Tommy Evans had it from Rampart for a while. Then his brother Jesse Evans, he had it in the last when they quit, you know. And then the airplanes took it over after. But they'd haul a lot of freight too, you know. They'd haul a lot of freight with the mail, and they'd that was extra, of course, you know. People have freight coming. Yeah, they at that time it was pretty good, you know.
So would a mail carrier make out better than a trapper, for instance?
Oh, no, I wouldn't say that. All depends, you know, how trapping is here. When there was fur, rabbits in that, the trappers would make pretty good when the fur was around. But then when there was years when there was no rabbits, you didn't do very good. It's pretty lean trapping, you know. You had to wrestle pretty good to... Trapping, you know, trapping is all depends too how hard you worked at it. Some guys went out and they sat out in the cabin. They didn't come in it very much. A lot of guys that worked at it, you know, when there was fur around, they made good catches. They made good money, you know. And it all depends out on the market too. And for like when we were shooting beaver, I shown you, it's only $10 a piece for a big blanket, you know.
Well, when were the fur prices best that you remember?
Well, they're, when they was real good, one time when they were real good, that's during the war when I was in the Army, they were good. And they were good then. And, well, they're better right here in the last few years than they've been in a long time, you know. In the 20s at one time, I guess around 26, 27, 28, and there for was good, but that was before my time I was trapping. But the fur was real good then, you know. But then in the 30s, 30 and 31, 30, the fur was way down then, you know. And then right after the war, it was way down. Link and that foxes is worth nothing. They wouldn't even hardly want to buy them. They wasn't worth nothing. A couple dollars for a fox.
Why'd that happen after
the war? Just the style went out. They wouldn't. Link wasn't worth nothing. Get $5, $6, $7, $8, $10. Had to be a good link if you got $10 for it, I'll tell you. And they wouldn't even buy him. The fur buyers, if you didn't have marten or mink and lots of other fur, they wouldn't even, if you just went in there with straight nothing but foxes and link, they wouldn't even buy him. Didn't want him. They'd buy you. If you had him, when you had this other fur, they'd buy him to get the other fur. Yeah, they wouldn't. They wouldn't offer you nothing. Hmm. I sold link as cheap as $3 a piece, you know. Nothing. The same link now they're probably getting $150, $200 for.
Oh, that's minimum. Yeah,
yeah, at least that.
Yeah. Well, so you remember any of the fur buyers around here?
Oh, there are a lot of fur buyers. All the NC bought fur, and Vachon and Tannon, Johnny Swagler and Charlie Main and in Fairbanks, and then there'd be a lot of them traveling around. Leo Kay was another one, and then old Goldstein from Juneau, and there was one guy there around there. You used to call him the Walrus. He was had a big mustache. I can't remember his name, but he'd buy in fur, and every place in a trader in the country that had a star bought fur, you know.
So if say you came in with your catch around I don't know when you'd come in, I think Christmas time or something like that.
Well, a lot of guys come in at Christmas. A lot of guys wouldn't come in till the spring of the year.
How about you?
Would you? Well, I'd never sold. Sometimes Christmas I'd ship out or send a bunch, come in with them. Or in the spring, a lot of times when I come in, there was somebody around offered me a good price, I'd sell. Or a lot of times I'd take them to Fairbanks, too, and sell them. Where there was more fur buyers, you know, had more chance.
So, like, you bring your furs in to a guy, what's it like?
Well, they're the same as that. Everybody tried to get them as cheap as they could, you know, and you had to shop around, you know. And
most all of them have a bottle of whiskey with them? To.
Oh, no, I don't know. I never had that pulled on me anyway.
Yeah. And what sort of things would they do to try to get them cheaper?
Well, they'd offer you, you know, try to get them as cheap as they could, you know. And then, of course, they'd go down. They'd probably come up, too. Well, you'd shop around yourself and find out what the price of fur was, you know. You didn't just get rid of them for anything anybody'd offer you. You had to. But then a lot of times, and the fur buyers is traveling around all the time. They come through this town. You'd maybe come in here, you had fur, you knew somebody'd come through. And you just wait around till a fur buyer comes through and then sell your fur. But you could go to all these stores, like the NC Company. They bought fur, they bought it all over, you know. They was always pretty well up there with anybody, you know, with the rest of them.
You ever get really taken on your fur?
No, I wouldn't say that. If you got took, it was your own fault. You didn't have to sell. The only time you made a mistake is if you'd ship out, you know. If you send your fur, then they had the fur. They could give you whatever they wanted. That's where you'd...
So you're almost always better off selling it to a guy, huh?
Face well, you're better off, yeah, because then you're looking at the guy, you know, what you can say yes or no. But Sears and Roebuck, you know, they had a one time, and so did West Coast Grocery. You'd ship your fur to them, and they held auctions, and they'd sell it for a percentage, and you could do good with them. They were pretty good. I tried them. I done pretty good. And, of course, Seattle Fur Exchange is another one. But I've shipped now like Mass and Steffens. That's an old fur outfit, and I always done pretty. Shipped them a little now and then, you know. And I done pretty good with them. They were pretty good. But then there was a lot of them Jippo outfits around, you know, come up, you know, a big price, and a lot of guys got stung with them, you know.
I mean, they'd offer a big price.
Yeah, and then I wouldn't get nothing when you'd ship it to them.
What kind of things did they take off for?
Take off? They'd just offer you a real low price, and they'd have all kinds of excuses. The fur was damaged or short hair, the color wasn't right. They'd give you more excuses, you know. That's the way they'd grade them, you know. You could take skins and pick them out, you know. Out of a whole bunch, you know, a lot of them birds, and you couldn't see no difference. But when you shipped them out to some, they'd have about 2-3 different grades, you know. They'd give you a big price for one, and then cut the other one in half, and it'd be the same, practically the same skin, you know. It was a skin game, you know, everybody trying to...
So what sorts of things could you do to try to up the price on the fur?
Well, there was a certain market, you know, we knew a guy knew they had all what the market was, and nothing you could do. You just had to take the best offer you'd get. That's the way you sold them.
Well, did you ever do things like, for instance, you got a bunch of marten, you know, and you got a big marten and it's just got a little tail on it, and you got a little marten that's got a big tail on it, and you switch the tails?
Well, that don't matter, anything like that. Because you can take, they'll buy, if you have a marten that's chewed up or a fox, they'll buy the tail. That don't mean nothing, because separate, they sell them on another good skin, you know. Tail don't mean that. That don't mean nothing. Rubbed fur and stuff like that, you know, is what where the guard hairs are rubbed off and that. That's where they don't.
Is there anything you can do to cover up that sort of thing?
No, nothing you can do.
Well, when you and your brother used to trap, did you trap together all the time?
Yeah, we trapped together quite a few years, and he was late years, he trapped by himself, and I did. But we'd always trap beaver together every spring. We'd go down Minnetola Vanna, down below Livengood and them flats. And but we trapped quite a bit together, quite a few years.
How would you work that out, trapping together? Just split what you make, or?
That's the way we used to do it. Uh-huh. See, he'd go one way and the other way, and we'd go together. The trail was tough, break trail and all that, you know, and set traps and build the camps and all that, and trap together and then split the catch, sell it, and split the expenses and everything. Split it down the line, 50-50.
Even if his traps caught everything?
Huh?
Even if one guy's traps caught everything?
Well, go because you caught another skin more than the other guy. You have to have more. You don't go that route when you're partners, you know.
Is that the way everybody did it?
Yeah. A lot of guys went out, different guys went out together, and one guy'd have his line, he'd go his way, he just kind of went out for company. There's a couple of guys here used to go up to Cosno, Jim Alexander and Tom Armstrong, and he went his way, and Armstrong went one way, and Alexander went the other, and of course, whatever you caught was yours, you know, you didn't. If you wanted to lay in a cabin, you stayed. If you wanted a trap, you trap. No concern of one another, you know. The guys used to do that, you know. Of course, it's like everything else. A lot of partners, all kinds of squabbles, and they went together over one guy figured he'd done more work than the other.
This guy cut all the wood, and
yeah. Yeah, a lot of them.
Yeah,
there's lots of them kind of deals, you know.
Well, what sorts of things would they squabble about?
You know, everything. You know, a lot of guys, they can get in more trouble, you know. They just don't get along, you know. I suppose like the old saying, cabin fever.
Yeah. You ever meet anybody had cabin fever?
Well, I never had too many partners. I had me and another guy trapped besides my brother. And we got along real good. Of course, we mined together and prospected and everything. We never had no trouble at all.
How about it? You heard about other guys that had cabin?
Oh, there's a lot of guys that don't go out and they don't even spend the winter. They got split up and all kinds of them deals.
Well, you know, I'm really interested in this thing, cabin fever, you know, because...
Oh, they call it cabin fever, just two guys are by themselves and they just can't get along, you know what I mean? And, of course, that's the old saying, cabin fever, you know.
But do they start acting real screwy or anything?
Oh, I don't know. I never been around them myself. They just don't get along, get arguing, you know, about everything and just... Well, you know how lots of partners are. They just don't get along and then, of course, it just...
Yeah, well, guys can do that in the summertime, too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it don't... you know how some guys are. You can... even a good fella, you can't get along with a lot of guys. You can't... a week, you can't get along with them. Well, there's some guys are pretty hard to get along with, and other guys are real easy, you know. Same thing with married people. Look at that. Put it that way. <Yeah. laughs> Don't last very long. And I don't know what you want to call it, cabin fever.
Yeah, that's got to be worse. But are there certain sorts of things that make it harder, that guys have a harder time getting along with, you know, like whips on or... or drifting or trapping or, you know, or what seems to be the hardest thing for guys to get along on?
Well, I don't know. I can't answer that. Just don't. A lot of guys are just hard to get along with, you know. That even if you bend over backwards, anything you try to do, I've seen that, seen different people, you know, and they still... everything wrong, you know, everything's, you know, they gotta be there, everything's gotta be their way, and they get set in their ways, and anything the other guy does is wrong, even if you just can't please them. There's all kinds of that, you know. That's why so many, there's all kinds of guys, like when me and my brother, we was for years, and we got along good, we never had no troubles, and but he wouldn't take a partner. He wouldn't take a partner out. He trapped by himself, you know. For when I went on Hester, I was by myself too. I only had a partner 1 year. And me and this guy went out and built that line. And then my brother was by himself. He wouldn't take a partner for the simple reason he didn't want to get in no arguments or anything. And he said, "I can don't bother me to stay out in the woods, and I can do anything I want." And I got nobody to complain. Well, that's the way to be. And I was the same way. I went out by myself. I didn't want no partners. And I was... a lot of guys can't stay out by themselves. You know, they got to be together too. You know what I mean? There's a lot of guys like that. It never bothered me, or never bothered my brother. When we used to trap together, we always had dogs and that. And of course, he had dogs, I had dogs. He'd never go into town. He'd go out in the fall of the year, and he wouldn't come back in till in the spring when trapping was gone. All done. I'd go in and haul out the food, the grub. He said, "You go in. When I'm going in, I'm going to stay." And he'd never go in. I'd go haul the supplies.
What was town then? What's town?
Well, any place where it's like live and good or come into your, whoever was close, is the, you know, like going around Rampart that one winter, go in there and
what was Manly like when you first saw it?
Well, there were, see, Manly, all the mining was out. Everybody lived out of Manly. There wasn't many people around here. Just about like it is now, no more. In the winter, there'd probably be more come in here. There's a few more. But like Woodchopper and Tofty and Eureka, there's a lot of people out there, you know.
So what was Manly? Some kind of a supply depot?
It was just a supply, you know. That's all the supplies that come in here by boat, you know, and then everybody supplied out of here. There'd be a lot of, like, Woodchopper, there'd be American Cricket, people all over, you know. And then there was a lot of people living along the river. Like, I told you, trappers, whites, and natives. And that's where they'd come in here, get their supplies, or go down to town, or the ones too far away.
Well, just hard to guess, you know, but how many people do you think lived and used Manly as a supply depot?
All around, oh, I imagine there was a few hundred all the time. I imagine there's that many. See, they had up here too, they had a trading post. Harry Martin was up at the mouth of the Tolvana. And a lot of the natives from the Cantish, and there, a lot of them would buy their stuff there, you know. And then Johnny Camel was up at Old Minto. And, of course, a lot of the, they'd buy... natives would trade with him, you know. Then they, a lot of them was close to Nenana. They'd go to Nenana, you know. And the trail was always open, you know. Mail was over, and there's lots of traffic on a trail. Like these old, these roads from here to Tanner, they were hard all the time, you know. You could, good roads, you know. Well, it's a big snowfall come, you know, all at once, you know, and then they'd always wait for the mail team to break the trail.
Those guys had to do it, huh?
Yeah, they had to go.
Oh, boy, that must have been sometimes a bum job to have. Oh. Well, what was the first year you came to Manly?
I walked in here from Fairbanks. I went on the road and I quit. Then I walked into Fairbanks, and I come from Fairbanks back to Live and Good, and then I walked from Live and Good here in June 1934.
So what'd you do when you got here?
Oh, I fooled around here, and I worked for Tim Willard there for a while. He had the Fox Farm. I worked for him. And
whereabouts is that Fox Farm?
Well, right over here where... I don't know who's got that, you know, where Ron Russell lived. You know that place right across from...
Andres?
And is that their name? There's a, that's where the Fox Farm was. Then I went fishing with a guy up the river year or two and fooled around. And then I trapped that winter out of here. I trapped around Dugan Creek and across the river. And then there wasn't too much fur that winter, but I made enough to... goodbye on live. And then a wood contract come up that year too. A feller got it by the name of Louis Johnson. He was working for his uncle out here, Pete Johnson, at Eureka. And we cut 100 cords of wood across the river from Baker Creek. We got $8 a cord for that too. And there was snow. There was snow up to your ears that when a lot of snow, you'd fall a tree and you couldn't hardly find it. Oh. We bucked it up and we'd go out every day. We'd work 6-7 hours a day, you know. We were both pretty young. He's a big skookum Swede.
And then what, you had tents over there?
No, we had a cabin. There was a cabin on this side of the river. We lived in that. And then we got this guy at the sawmill, old Mel Mall, you know, I showed you the picture. He had a Fortson tractor with a big, had a track on it, and he hauled it to the bank for us. We give him $1.50 a cord. And we helped him load, you know, and unload. And
well... this walking, I mean, you did a lot of walking, huh?
Oh, I was going someplace all the time.
And you said you walked from Fairbanks to Live and Good to Manly.
Mm-hmm.
You just take off and start walking.
Oh, yeah, just take off. Take a little grub and your rifle and fish line. And well, I walked in the winter quite a bit, too, around, you know. Mm-hmm. Used to keep going all the time. I like to beat around in the hills, you know, and go out prospecting and then, of course, trapping. Then I got done lots of trapping, you know.
So did Frank come to Manly with you too?
No, he come later. We both come to Alaska together, and then he stayed in Fairbanks, I probably mentioned. He went work on this survey. On the Richardson Highway, they were surveying these homesteads. The engineer, head surveyor, Leonard Berlin, he was an old hand around the country. And during the war, he was a lieutenant in the Navy. He was a big wheel up here for the Seabees up at Umiat. And they were prospecting for oil there, you know. Then he, the same guy, he was, after the war, he was surveying. He was down here, surveyed some homesteads for the NC, and he surveyed a homestead up there for old Titus Alexander.
For Titus Alexander?
Yeah.
Is he a native guy?
Yeah.
Whereabouts was that homestead?
Well, right, you know, where Baker Bluff is, mm-hmm. up here. Well, right where Baker Creek comes, runs into the... Do you remember that place up there where the old channel used to?
Yeah.
Well, right up in there, that was all. He's had 160 acres in there. He used to be the old chief of these guys around here.
Right, I heard that name before.
Yeah.
What kind of a guy was he? Did you know him?
I knew him, yeah. Well, he was an old-time Indian, you know. All he ever done was just fished in the summer and trapped in the winter, you know.
Did you know any of the other chiefs from around here? Like there's a guy...
Well, I knew a lot of these late year chiefs. They have one about every other year.
But I mean around that time, like
no,
the 40s, you know?
He was the one around here. Well, then around Enan, Well, he was the only one around here for a long ways. I don't remember who was the chief around town, though. They didn't have as many chiefs them days, it seemed to me, like they got now.
Oh, well.
So you said your brother came to survey on that job?
Well, he worked on that survey that summer. Then he went that winter. He stayed around Fairbanks, and he cut cordwood for a guy there that had a big cordwood camp. He was selling wood, Marlow Silage. And then he come down that summer and with George Black on a boat. He had to in that spring break up, and we stayed. We was together then practically all the time, trapping and till the war come on. And
so you were here in Manly for breakup in 1934?
Yeah, I was here.
What was breakup like?
It's just average breakup. He said. You don't, once in a while you get flooded out, you know, but that's it all depends on the ice, you know, down there when it jams up, then it backs up you know.
Well, was the river running through the slough then?
No, never has in my time, or it never has. The only thing is the ice down below here, there's that big island down there to jam up, and then of course the water backs up. You got lots of water coming in. But then where you got, ain't got much ice, or it don't seem like snow makes much difference if the ice runs free, you know what I mean, in too big of chunks and that. It river runs clear. I seen all kinds of years, lots of snow, don't. But then when it jams, it'll flood back up here. I've seen it flood back here. It only jam up for 2-3 hours, you know, water come back, and just enough to get water all around town, then break loose, and in 2 hours it'd be all gone. And that was it in. Just enough to get everything stirred up around here good.
Well, would you get flooded out in this cabin right here?
No, only 1 year, and it was a kind of a fluke. It jammed up the river here, and the water all come down around the slough and that, and they had 5 feet of water here in town. I wasn't here that year. I was that was in 1956. I was up freighting for Alfred Gezi, Alaska Freight Lines, to Carnation Gulf from Eagle when they're building that early warning line. Mm-hmm. You know, I had a cabin right over, right behind that shed there, and I just built it that summer, and it even floated that cabin. The water was high, and there was a current coming through town here, and it took out the old bridge, and the only thing that saved the cabin was a guy. Louis Anderson. He had a big aerial for his radio, you know, and he had an iron, big iron peg drove in a ground pipe in the cabin. It was still, ground was frozen, the cabin hooked up on that. And I had all my guns in there, and I lost a lot of stuff too, but I had 6-7 rifles and the shotguns and everything. And but I pulled it back up. Then I cut when I come back from working up north there, and I had a cat, and I jacked it up and brought it back to the regular site and put a go devil under it. But oh, it done a lot of damage around here. Everybody took a beating, you know. All the wood and the houses, you know, and C-Star, they took quite a beating on that. All the stuff got underwater, and Standard Oil had all kinds of, they was bringing oil, gasoline and that in here, then barreled, you know, they had no tankers and for the airplanes, and they were all over the country, you know. And it's quite a mess around here. Then all the cars are underwater, you know, and the clutches froze up, and you had the terrible.
What month was that then?
That's in April.
Oh, that was right in breakup.
Yeah, breakup.
You get any floods other than breakup?
Huh?
You ever get a flood?
Well, there was a lot of water around you that year. What was it, in 68, when they had that big flood in Fairbanks? It was all around you, but it never got in on this ridge, but it was a slough was way up, and it was water around some of these places, but I never got any.
You, ever since you've been in Manly, have you been staying right in this place?
No, I had 2-3 different cabins around, right in this area, yeah.
Did you build this one?
Yeah, I built this one. I built another one over there. I tore it down. It wasn't too good of a cabin, but I built this one then after that. Then my brother and a couple guys, they bought two of them here, belonged to different fellas. Well, I tore that one down, then they flooded, jackknifed it and everything. And then I had another one back here. It got kind of old, and I ripped it down and burnt it up for firewood. Well, it was always good for, you know. But there was a lot of old cabins around here. All through here was cabins. And guys, I don't know, just left, you know, when the camps are dying down, they got run down. People finally tore them down and burnt them up for firewood.
To get a place to live back then, would you have to buy land? Or
no, you just went any place. In that time, you just had squatter's rights. You just went any place.
Even right here in Manly, huh?
Yeah. Well, this was this old homestead here. That size got now. Mars Sabin had it. And then Chuck Dart. But any place else where there wasn't, these guys didn't have a home, you just went and built a cabin. That was all. Anybody's. Then in late years after the war, then come up all these home sites and headquarters sites and all that stuff, you know.
That was a pretty free time for a trapper then?
Oh, yeah. There was, well, at that time, there was only one game warden in Fairbanks, Sam White. He was the only game warden. They didn't bother you, you know. Guys didn't abuse, you know, there was the fellas that was, they didn't abuse it, you know, too much, you know. Of course, there's all taking a little game, you know, that was common. They all knew that, but they wasn't going around just shooting something to see it kick, you know, or for the horns or something like that, you know, just a moose or caribou for something to eat.
Well, like, how many moose or caribou would it take for a guy, say he's out trapping these hills around here?
Well, right around here, when I come around here, moose were scarce. Because at that time, they were shooting moose. They'd be shooting moose all the time. And before that, you know, there was no deep freezers or nothing around. And it was hard to get in the summer fresh meat, you know. There was hardly such a thing as fresh meat. And some of them had tunnels, you know, they drove them in the ground where the ground was froze, you know, ice, and they kept their meat in there. like Dan Green here, he'd get meat, and there was a tunnel right across the slough there, and they could keep it for so long. And then they put up a lot of ice, had ice houses, you know, and that. But, you know, that was in, then he got one of them walk-in freezers, but that was in late years, so about 1935, 36. This guy had the roadhouse, original owner, Dan Green. He was all right, you know, had cold storage all the time. And he'd rent out stalls, you know, people on them, you know, kept their meat in there. That went on for quite a while.
But how many, caribou would a guy probably use over the winter?
Well, if you was just for your own use, one guy, you know, you was allowed then use, allowed five, you know, five caribou. Legal, but you could take all you wanted. If you could eat more, you took them. It all depends on family, men, and that. And of course, a lot of caribou went for dog feed them days, too.
Yeah.
But there was a lot of caribou when I come around. They'd come through your for days, you know. A lot of caribou. They'd hang around here all winter. They'd be around in the North Fork, and there they'd be bunches there all winter. The last caribou I seen was up here, the head of the Hootenanny, in 1947. I was walking, I was over in their prospect, and I had, in fact, they're doing a little mining there on Gunnison Creek. I had a cat in there, and we're walking in there, and I seen about 15 in one bunch, and that was the last caribou I seen around here.
What happened to him?
He's just different route, I guess. Never come around. You know, they change their, you know, caribou, their migration routes. For a few years when I was on Hess trap, and there was a lot of caribou there. And then all at once they disappeared out of there. There wasn't any. I'd see them all winter long, you know. Then that one winter, they were there, and the next winter I didn't see one. They stayed in there all winter. They used to stay around the West Fork there when I first come around there all winter. And they disappeared out of there, too.
Did that make a big difference to people when caribou quit coming around?
Well, you know, you had more meat, you know, like in a winter, in a fall of the year, you know, you got them in the fall just right there. That's good, you know, and they're fat and good. But you get them like they had them. That was another screwball deal, having them seasons opened away in February. And they're nothing but a bag of bones, you know. Sure, you can eat them if you're starving, but 90% of the people who are shooting them just for the horns and just to be shooting them, you know. They ain't no good. Of course, if you got some dogs you're out and you got to feed the dogs, that's a bit.
Well, if they're no good for a human, they wouldn't be that good for dogs.
Well, the dog will eat anything, you know. Of course, they ain't very good feed, I'll say that, but you'll keep them alive, you might say. That was one big, you know, like around Denali and all through there around where, you know, they were hunting them caribou all winter, and that was just plain foolishness, you know, having the season open that late. Because you know that yourself, most of them guys were shooting them just to be out hunting. It was an after feed, especially so many GIs, you know. You know, they had time, they'd go out, they sure all want to shoot caribou. Well, you know what happened. Now there is no caribou.
You see a lot of trophy hunters around?
Well, you know, they're all over. Of course, they're clamping down on them now more than, but they just coming around here, you know, looking for horns and hides and like every place else.
They ever ask you to guide him someplace?
Oh, there's all kinds of guys around you want come in, you want me to, but I wasn't interested in that.
Why is that?
I just didn't want to go out with a bunch of, just didn't want it. I had 2-3 chances to go with guys that was established. Guys, you know, wanted me to go in with him. One guy, Benny Benson at Paxson's Lake, and then a guy up here, Red Adney in a Channel R, he wanted me to go in with him. I just don't go for waiting on somebody out like so many of them guys. You know, a lot of them hunters are good guys, but then a lot of them, they're a pain, you know. I know the guys that was doing it, you know.
Well, what do you think about guys that are trophy hunting just in general, you know?
Well, they're surely, at that time of the year, they're not after the meat. They're just after the horns or whatever they're. But they don't let them do that anymore, do they? Just take the horns and that. They got to take the whole thing, don't they? All the meat, they can't leave it anymore like they used to.
Yeah, well, legally.
Yeah. Well, if they catch them, they nail them too, you know. If they. Well, the whole, so much of the whole thing on game now and everything is all these small airplanes and snow goes. They're getting out all these small lakes that floats and everything, and they're getting every place where there's game, and they're killing the game, you know, as well as I do. I ain't been around, but I know guys that have been around, living around Healing there, said they come down there with